We are very grateful to have the Premier here today to discuss his government's vision for housing for British Columbians with us. So please join me in welcoming the Premier, David Eby.
Thanks, Trevor. It's great to be here today, and I understand that a number of my colleagues are meeting with some of your folks right now. So thank you for coming to Victoria. Thank you for meeting with our team and for sharing your suggestions about how to address the housing crisis in BC. Today's get-together was a chance for me to reflect on our relationship over the years. I would say in the early years of my political career, I would describe our relationship with the association as politely combative. It wasn't always easy. But regardless of where we stood on the issues in those days, the BCREA always had an open door, always wanted to have discussion, always wanted to ensure that the government, well, at the time, the opposition, understood your perspective on the issues. And I think that over the 10 years I've been in politics, our relationship has really evolved and matured because I think certainly my understanding of your work has improved. And I hope that your understanding of where our government wants to go on housing has improved as well. Realtors are, without question, and whenever I'm in my home community, many other parts of the province, are a key part of the heart of the community. Sponsoring community events, sponsoring teams, showing up, and you have the same desire that we have as a government, that every British Columbian has a chance to build a good life in this province. And one of the major obstacles for so many people in the province right now to building a good life here in BC is the cost of housing. People looking for a place to rent, can't find a place that they can afford to rent. People wanting to get into home ownership, a combination of high interest rates, down payment requirements, and the cost of housing itself, blocking them from getting into that housing. And on all of these issues, I think that we share a common goal. And as people on the front lines of housing, meeting with British Columbians every day that have aspirations of home ownership, or need to move into a bigger place for a family, or need to downsize, you have a perspective, and you have experiences that can inform government policy, make it better, and help us address these issues for people. Now, there are definitely two perspectives on housing that are being advanced right now in the legislature. One perspective is, essentially, the government needs to stay out of it. That the market will look after issues related to housing, and that the more government gets involved, the worse it's going to get. That is a perspective that I disagree with. The market did have free rein in British Columbia for a number of years, from I would say about the early 2000s to about 2017. And during that period of time, we saw a number of significant things happen. One is government abandoned the role that I think government needs to have in ensuring that middle-class families have a chance to get into the housing market. The government abandoned the role of facilitating the construction of rental housing that's attainable for people who help make our province go. And the consequence of that abandonment was that many speculators entered the market. And we saw people using homes as an investment, as a place to park money, rather than as a place to live. I disagree with that perspective. I think the government actually needs to be involved and needs to ensure that we're building enough housing for our population growth. We're building rental housing that people can actually afford to rent, and that we're restricting the ability of people to compete with those who are looking for a place to live, the people who want to compete for purposes of investment or for speculation. Now, I know that we may not all agree on that, but it's important to set that out, that there's a choice and there are two different, unlike a lot of the political issues that have been coming up lately, where they're more like culture war, US style, made up nonsense issues. This is a real distinction on an issue that matters to British Columbians. And so I would like to walk through with you what our government's doing to address the housing issue, why I think government needs to be involved. And all with the aim of, we're going to open it up for questions, having a bit of a discussion here today because I'd like to hear from you about it. Obviously, the housing issue is hugely complex. If there was a silver bullet, we would have fired it, we would have solved it, it would be done. But there are so many different things feeding into the challenges we face around housing right now. We looked in the short term, what can we do immediately to bring housing online that is desperately needed? So that's where you see initiatives like the speculation and vacancy tax. If you're leaving a place vacant and you're not living in it, you have to pay an additional level of tax that helps us build affordable housing that people need, because you're taking a housing unit off of the market that someone would like to rent or someone would like to buy for the purpose of investment. You're externalizing your costs, and we need to recover some of that to deal with what you're imposing on the rest of us. Around Airbnb, VRBO, short-term rentals, my family likes them. We like to use them on vacation. They're great. They are not great when they are soaking up the available long-term rental housing stock of the people who run the tourism industry in our province, or of the nurses and the teachers and the hospital workers and the city workers. They can't find a place to live, and they can't afford to live in community because there's nothing but short-term rentals. And when you go with a family trying to buy a place, when you're competing with someone who wants to buy a place and leave it vacant, or buy a place and use it as a hotel room, that is a real challenge for that family that's trying to find a place to live in the place that they call home. Strata rules, saying that it's illegal to rent your strata unit, saying that it's illegal for a family to live in a strata building, that if you have a kid, you have to move out, were unacceptable rules from our government's perspective in terms of a housing crisis. We can't kick people out when they have a kid. It's unfair, it's unreasonable. And in a rental housing crisis, I met a young woman in my constituency who had moved in with her boyfriend. She was excited to move in with him. She was in love with him. It was great. But she had a condo, and her building wouldn't let her rent it out. And as much as she loved this guy, she didn't necessarily think that selling her condo in order to move in with him was maybe the best long-term planning decision. She wanted to have a backup plan. So she wanted to rent out her place. And so the strata said, no, you're not allowed to. And she said, when we changed that rule, she was able to rent out her place, and she felt a lot better because she understood that we're in a housing crisis. She felt awful leaving a place vacant in the housing crisis, but she wasn't ready to sell her place. So opening up housing in the short term, identifying those places we can open up, and these initiatives are not minor initiatives. These are tens of thousands of units of rental housing that have been opened up through these initiatives. In terms of the crowd that you work with, someone's scrimped and saved and they've got their down payment, maybe they got a gift from the bank of mom and dad, they're looking in the housing market, first time home buyer. We have, as you know, an initiative around first time home buyers to waive the property transfer tax, to reduce it for them, to save them costs. But then you have to have the difficult discussion with them. Well, you have to find a place that costs less than $500,000. Well, good luck. And so in the budget, we've increased that to $835,000 as the threshold for the first time home buyer tax and exemption. But there's also a group of people who they're in a home and they're looking to move into they've had a kid and they'd like to move into a two bedroom, or they'd like to upsize, or they'd like to move to a different community. And we need to encourage new home construction across the province. So we also increased the threshold from $750,000 to $1.1 million for the discount on the property transfer tax for people moving from an existing home to a newly built home somewhere in the province. Also in the budget, and I know we're not absolutely necessarily in line on this initiative, but a flipping tax. When you're sitting with a client and you're trying to buy a place for them to move into, we don't want them competing for that place to live with somebody who's buying the home solely for the purpose of reselling it in a short period of time later for a higher price. Now, there's an important exemption to this flipping tax when we introduce it, which will be to ensure that people who are buying homes and adding units are exempted from the flipping tax. So if you're a contractor and you're seeing our government's initiative around allowing more than one unit to be constructed on a single family lot, and you have identified a property, a single family home, and you're gonna split it into two or into three units and do a bit of an expansion there so that three families can get into a single family neighborhood where there's a good school, there's a nice community center, and they'd love to see kids trick-or-treating, then you are not captured by this. But if you're just buying a place and flipping it, you are. We want people to create housing. We want more housing to be brought online. And we don't want people to engage in the housing market as if it is a financial instrument. In terms of the construction of more housing across the province, this is, I think, a point of agreement in the room between BCREA and the provincial government. We need a lot more housing in this province. And there is literally only one party in the legislature that supports all the initiatives that I'm about to list, and that is our party. So it is an election year. I'm not going to be extremely partisan, but I will point out that there is only one party that supports all of these initiatives. Allowing single-family homes to be split into more than one unit with just a development permit, not a full rezoning, we support that. Allowing additional density as of right close to the transit stations that we're putting money into across the province, whether it's rapid transit or SkyTrain, we support that. We're actually buying up parcels of land around new transit stations, rapid transit and the Surrey Langley SkyTrain station, so that we can partner with the private sector and ensure that the housing that's built close to transit is actually attainable, actually affordable for the people who actually use transit. And that we can do integrated developments close to transit that make sense, that are livable, include things like daycare and schools and other essential amenities to support people who want to live close to a transit station to get to work. Those changes are just part of the work that we're doing. They're not universally popular, but they are universally necessary. It is 100% necessary that we make it easier to build housing. We're not just pointing at municipalities around needing to make it easier to build the housing that we need. For our own provincial processes, we prioritize speeding up permitting around housing, Ministry of Transportation permitting, water use permitting that comes through government, and we have dramatically reduced permitting times for housing approval. In addition to this, you may have heard about our program BC Built. The initial tranche of projects around this is dedicated to rental housing. This is where we use publicly owned land, school board land, health authority land, municipal government land, provincial government land, federal government land, to build attainable housing. We've got about 20 projects, almost all of them focused on rental housing right now. But this project is also going to do attainable housing for purchase, where middle-income housing for purchase will be constructed at lower cost. We think about 30% lower than market cost if we're successful in this initiative, which will give people looking to get into the market, especially in categories where we're really trying to support people, to be able to stay in communities. Those public sector workers that ensure the schools and the healthcare system and services are there, the people who are key to our tourism industry, hospitality sector, and other key workers to ensure that our communities are successful. And police, fire, first responders, and so on. But making sure that they actually have a chance to get into the housing market is a priority for us as well. Our progress to date, we had 45,000 new homes registered in 2023. That's an increase of 30%. Our housing starts and our rental housing completions are an order of magnitude higher than projections under the previous government because we have facilitated and encouraged faster permitting and more housing construction, but also because the demand is massive right now, and it's not enough. And so you will see us taking every measure possible to increase the housing supply of every kind that we can to ensure that British Columbians have a chance to build a good life here. So thank you for your help in this important work. There was a point in time in our relationship when my friends marveled that my wife and I were able to find a realtor in order to sell our place. We're well past that point. Today, we're constructive partners working together for all British Columbians to make sure they have a good place to live. We have a shared goal of doing that, ensuring that when people enter into the market, it's fair for them, that they have a chance to do what they want to do, to buy the place of their dreams. And I want to thank you and your members for helping to build strong communities and for being supporters around that agenda, because we have to talk to British Columbians about why we're making these changes around the zoning in their neighborhoods, and realtors will be part of that conversation. So thank you in advance for that.
Mark's got your mic there. I thought I'd just start with A story from last week. I was taking an Uber, as I often do, and the Uber driver's phone rang, and he said, "Oh, do you mind if I answer?" I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, go ahead." And he pressed the button, and it answers, and it was an NDP robocall, and "Hi, I'm David Eby, the Premier of British Columbia."
That wasn't a robocall, Trevor. I remember that one. Yeah.
Well, he turned it off, and I said, "Oh, I'm going to be on stage with him in a week." And he said, "Oh, the Premier?" I said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, do you like the Premier?" And he paused. He went, "Yep, yep." And I said, "What do you like about him?" And he paused again. He went, "Seems nice." So there you go. There's words of praise from the Uber sector.
It's awesome. With me and my wife, that's three.
We are now, in the latter part of our conference. We've seen multiple party leaders at this point in time. The leader of the Provincial Conservative Party, Kevin Falcon, was here yesterday as well. Now you're on stage. So we've certainly heard a gamut of varying perspectives and a lot of different ideas. But it's been interesting to see that throughout that, I think you've done so much, it's often difficult to criticize the amount of work that you've done. It's quieted down a lot of the dissent, and it must be challenging to be the opposition in many ways. I'm curious, at the federal level, with the change of housing minister with Sean Fraser, and all the movement that he's also trying to do, how is your relationship with Sean Fraser?
Okay. First of all, yes, I do think it is challenging to be the opposition.
Right.
To your point, I think that, and I actually thought that there was a point of consensus in the legislature around a number of these initiatives. When I was meeting with the Home Builders Association, Urban Development Institute, Realtors, and anyone who has some kind of contact with housing, and this includes some nonprofit housing advocacy organizations as well, there's just like this consensus that population's growing, we need to build a lot more housing, takes too long to build housing, big changes are needed. I think as we've gotten into the election year, we've seen the split on different initiatives, whether Airbnb or the single family multi-unit or whatever it is. And people are going to stake out their positions, but there was a period of time, and actually the Federal Housing Task Force that they just had, a nonpartisan task force, recommended a whole array of initiatives, the vast majority of which BC has either implemented or our regulations are coming into effect very soon. I think everybody knows what needs to be done on housing. And anything else is, with all due respect, political posturing for different interest groups. We just need to build a lot more housing. We need to build it faster, and we need to do everything we can to make sure that that happens. And I think that post-election, there will be, again, regardless of who's governing, there will be a consensus again because that is the only thing that's going to solve the housing crisis in British Columbia. The component of our relationship with the federal government, it's a positive one. They brought $2 billion to the BC Builds initiative. In terms of construction financing and takeout financing, which will be very useful for us to advance that. It brings a total of $5 billion around constructing middle-income rental and housing for purchase, which we think will be have a significant impact on the order of probably about 10,000 units is our current target. And keeping in mind that it keeps cycling, so as the units are complete, the financing comes out and goes back into other initiatives. And I like Scott. I think he's a thoughtful guy. I think he wants to get some things done. And the only challenge that we have, and it's a perennial challenge in British Columbia, is to maintain the federal government's attention to British Columbia. They're in Ontario, literally. They are next door to Quebec. The seat count, according to the Constitution, is one that requires their attention on those provinces. And so it's always us out there trying to pull them out west. Look at what we're doing out here, support our work out here. And that's my only challenge with the federal government, is maintaining their some focus on British Columbia and to support the innovative programs we're doing here rather than respond to some of the other political challenges they have with premiers in other provinces.
With all the movement that's happening on the federal side as well as the provincial side, and then provincially leaning on municipalities in terms of housing targets, the three tiers of government are now more intertwined on housing policy, really, than has historically ever been the case. To that end, one of the things we've long been calling for on the federal side, and then last year and carrying forward this year, that we're making the push for is really the establishment of housing roundtables. Not huge 200 people roundtables, but more careful collaboration with the three tiers of government in terms of making sure everybody's on the same page or as best as possible moving forwards, and also establishing networks so that government can better utilize private sector expertise. You know, I think one of the things that's been made abundantly clear over the last couple of days as we really pick apart housing issues, it is such a perfect storm, but that's also incredibly complex. And in many ways, sometimes I would argue more complex than a few policy people in a ministry can really single-handedly grapple with. I'm wondering what your position is on that in terms of carefully chosen roundtables to pressure test policy before it goes public.
I think it's critical that we have feedback from the front line on policy changes, so we understand in advance what the impacts are going to be. The vast majority of our housing initiatives come from people who are doing the work in the sector in one way or another. And the BCREA is no exception to that. There is one area that's challenging, which is around any tax initiative. When you're proposing to change taxes, the risk of disclosure and people arranging their business in a way that's tax advantageous, having advanced notice of where government's going, is one that's a little bit challenging. Now, the flipping tax was a notable exception to that. I held a press conference and I said the flipping tax is coming three times because we don't want the flipping tax to reduce housing supply. We want people that are holding housing for investments to put those houses on the market now to avoid the tax. We know that there's limited inventory out there. We want people to be listing their places for sale. We wanted them to know it was coming. We wanted them to be able to arrange their business to get out of those investments before the tax. We don't want to collect a penny from that tax. We want people to not buy housing for this purpose. We want them to buy it as a place to live or to construct additional housing units. But that's the only exception I would put on this, is where it's difficult to engage with you. And these have been some of the most material changes that we made. Speculation and vacancy tax is a good example. But yes, as a core principle, I think that we can lean on the BCREA more heavily. And I actually spoke with the housing minister. I said, how'd your session go? And he said that he made the commitment to you that he was going to use the BCREA more to lean on in terms of engagement around policy and our work with municipal and federal leadership to anticipate policy and make sure it's better designed.
To put a compliment to him, that was a really exciting session. I thought the engagement and his knowledge base, I mean, obviously, he's got a very complicated portfolio, but it was really spot on.
And, okay, I'll up my game.
Okay, good. Let's carry forward.
Okay, here we go.
All right. You want to up your game?
Okay. That's right, yeah.
Government gets it right sometimes. Government gets it wrong sometimes. Government gets it really wrong other times. The rescission period. When the rescission period was announced a year ago, we were totally blindsided by it. That's fine. We endeavored to do 50 pages of very careful research, not in any manner in a self-interested sectoral way, but in terms of, if you're going to state that consumer protection is so important, somebody should be doing the research before announcing the policy. We endeavored to do that. That's its own situation. Where this really crosses the line, as far as I'm concerned, is the fact that our regulator endorsed our recommendations not to adopt a rescission period, but to move forwards with a pre-offer period so that when a house is listed, all the relevant material could be made public right up front to really allow a consumer to do their due diligence. Again, the regulator, the body that is put in charge of having the expertise to oversee our sector, endorsed that, and it was flatly ignored by the minister in charge of that policy. As we move forwards a year later, you know, we have carried forwards to do our metrics, to do our analysis, to look at how it is working, what unforeseen consequences it's causing, and it is roundly ineffective in our findings. What I would just query you today, knowing it's an election year, government doesn't like to back down from new ideas, but where we are really worried is that if that's a created policy to protect the public, it's not going to. And as interest rates wane, we all know this market is going to heat up big time, and that policy is not going to do its intended consequence. So it's not the kind of thing that we can spend a few years, figure out, should we change it? If this market superheats up, we're going to have real problems on our hands. So I query you whether or not your government would have interest in reviewing it moving forwards. We've certainly done the homework. We can present very clear findings and metrics, but it's certainly one worth reassessment under our perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Trevor. One of the definitely the big challenges in government is being able to hear feedback that is at odds with official government position. This is something that I really work on as premier, and a commitment I want to make to British Columbians is we're here to try to solve problems. We're not here to impose a particular solution. And if what we put in place doesn't work, has unintended consequences, and it doesn't matter what the issue is. It could be the toxic drug crisis response. It could be issues around housing. It could be issues around healthcare. If it's not working, then we're going to change it. And as a political gamble, the politics of today is that you never acknowledge that things aren't panning out exactly as you planned when you announced the policy, and you double down, and you say that anybody who says otherwise is obviously an agent of the other party or dark forces that are trying to like conspire against you, whatever. That is not the kind of politics I want for British Columbia. The problems we face are too big. They're too generational. Whether it's climate change or people dying in the streets or housing, it's the future of our economy. It's the future that people see for themselves in British Columbia. So my commitment to you, and it's on this issue, on any other issue, if you see things that are not working the way we intended, there are unintended consequences, the mischief that we're going after is not being addressed by a government policy, I want you to bring it forward. I want to work with you to make sure that it does work. So absolutely, we're happy to look at it. There have been a small number of people who have taken advantage of the rescission period by our data, which could be interpreted two ways. One is that the anxiety that a lot of people had that there would be a mass number of people walking away from their contracts has not come to pass. The other is that maybe it's not working as intended. The third is that the market conditions are such that we haven't seen the worst impacts. All these things are possible. I'd be glad to look at whatever you've got. I know the housing minister would as well. If there is a better way to ensure that consumers are protected from what we're concerned about, which is rushing into a purchase without time to do an inspection, without knowing about the oil tank in the backyard that's leaking, and then suddenly facing a bill for hundreds of thousands of dollars that they can't afford, or the bats, the famous story was the bats in the attic, but they didn't find the bats until after the closing. You know, people were making offers really fast, and they weren't doing that due diligence work. And that's the concern that we have. Our interest is addressing that concern. Our interest is not imposing a particular solution. So let's work together on solutions that work for people.
I certainly think as we solidify that relationship moving forwards, we're very well resourced, our economics department, our research department, and helping government fine-tune these policies, especially at the pace that you're going. You're certainly keeping our research department very busy with the legislative pace. At a certain point, I'm just like, I literally at a certain point midweek was like, come on, like when I read like yet another press release, you certainly weren't pulling your punches with the pace leading to the end of 2023.
That's because of the scope of the challenge that we face, and my commitment to British, when I was sworn in as premier, I said, look, we're not going to solve these big issues before the next election, but I'm going to put the pieces in place so you can see where we're going, and you can decide, yeah, we want to keep going in this direction, or nope, we don't think those are going to address the issues, and we want to go a different direction. And so having those pieces in place is critically important to government to show people where we're going on these issues so that people can make an informed decision at the election whether or not they want to keep going in that direction. So my apologies to your research team.
Let's talk about the younger generations really struggling under affordability issues in this province. We're starting to see some, you know, net migration out of the province for people that are really trying to pursue their home buying dreams in other provinces. what can be done there to really try to stem that flow and keep young people living in British Columbia?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's such a paradox because it makes me a little bit crazy when I see a headline that the population is going down in British Columbia, that we have a net out migration, because the numbers of people that are moving to British Columbia are record-setting and unprecedented. We added more than 500,000 people to our MSP program in just the last 36 months. 500,000 people. These are all individuals that are looking for housing, that are looking for jobs, that are looking for, and we need them. These are people who are helping run our healthcare system. They're helping build the housing we need. They're helping fill the jobs of a bunch of baby boomers who are retiring. It's essential, but boy, we need a lot of homes for them. And so, first of all, even just in this room, if we can all just acknowledge and commit to ourselves that when we're talking to family and friends, that everybody understands the population of British Columbia is growing and setting records. But there is a group that is really challenged to see a future for themselves in this province. And that is young people who are already in British Columbia, who want to start a family, who want to build a life for themselves here. And I am hugely anxious about that group. Our population numbers can go up dramatically. If we are failing the next generation of British Columbians and they're deciding to look elsewhere, we are not going to have a sustainable province going forward. We need people to build a good life here and to see that they have a future here. And that is exactly what the BC Builds program, the first time home buyer pieces, and others are aimed, the Airbnb rules are aimed at. Making sure that people actually have a chance to do that, to build a life for themselves here in the province. We are not going to be a government that sees housing solely as an issue around social housing for the poorest of the poor. We are committed to addressing this issue around middle-income people who want to see a future for themselves here in the province, and we're going to make the tough decisions that make sure that that housing gets delivered for them. It is a big anxiety for me. That right now young people don't see that, and we're going to do what's necessary to deliver that, including having those hard conversations with the mayors about the single family multi-unit initiative, around the zoning and permitting processes, and also making sure that we're recognizing that reality for British Columbians in an atmosphere of a growing province that does run a significant risk of leaving them behind.
With the pace of housing announcements that you've made in recent months, and with an election coming up, I'm curious if there's any new directions and new legislation and new housing measures that you're working on that you'd like to make mention of today.
Are you soliciting work for the research team? Yeah, the research team's like,
I'm just trying to get us ahead.
Please say no. Now until October, the major pieces are laid out in the budget, the flipping tax, we have the short-term rental regulations coming into place, we have the regulations around single-family multi-unit and transit-oriented development coming into place. We have multiple sites around BC Builds that will be advancing through. We have partnerships with First Nations around attainable middle-income housing, and then initiatives around deep core housing for people struggling in the streets and so on. And so that'll really be the focus between now and the election, and obviously during the election period, everyone will put forward their proposals for housing. So you'll see ours alongside the others, and your members can vote accordingly.
Once the others actually finish writing them, it's
absolutely right. Yeah, we're keeping them busy too.
Kevin Falcon did a good job of talking a long time on four bullet points when it came to his housing announcement yesterday. One of the things, and it was made mention of yesterday, and in passing in one of the sessions, I thought it was kind of an interesting comment. At the pace of housing announcements that you've made and how strongly they've been put together and to really often quiet the voice of the NIMBY, does that at times put you at odds with your own constituents? Being that you're in Point Grey, being that that's a lot of like very valuable housing, affluent owners of properties, how is that something that you've balanced? Has that been much of a problem for you?
It's a conversation, for sure. The first example of that conversation with my constituents was around an ongoing BC housing project on the eastern side of my constituency. It is 20 stories, I think. Seniors and people at risk of homelessness, housing development, and it is highly controversial in the area where it's proposed. And I have been unambiguously in support, both as housing minister and as premier, of building the project. And the message for people is pretty straightforward. We got homeless people and kids living outside. We got lots of people at risk of homelessness in our neighborhoods. We need this kind of housing everywhere, and it can't be, as premier, that I say, okay, well, we need it all over the province except in my constituency. That how does that make any sense? We need this kind of housing all over. We got a lot of seniors facing homelessness. We got a lot of people struggling with homelessness. We got to get them inside. The multi-unit single family has not, to date, been hugely controversial in my constituency. But the Jericho Lands, which is a former military base, which is owned by Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh, is right in the heart of my constituency. There is a proposal for really significant density on that site, as well as a SkyTrain stop, and there is significant opposition to the proposal in the community. MST have my total support in advancing this project. The additional density brings with it significant affordability benefits, as well as some really nice community amenities. And we're desperate for housing. And then I think also, and I'm hopeful, brings opportunities for us to partner with them on ensuring even more attainable housing for the middle class in that development site. It's not an easy conversation anywhere in the province. People have anxieties about this, but the anxiety around, will my kids have a chance to live in this province? Will I be able to see my grandkids without having to cross a provincial or international border? You know, what is the future of our neighborhood? I don't see kids trick-or-treating anymore. I do worry about what our neighborhood looks like, and it feels like nobody lives in the home across the street from us, and there used to be so many people out in the streets, and now we don't see people anymore. What about our local business area on 10th and Point Grey Village? It seems like the stores are really struggling. Like, how do we support our local merchants that we like so much? These are the points where we're able to enter into the conversation about making sure that the community is successful, that your kids have a chance to live in the community where they grew up, that the stores that you like are available and successful, and that we have the kind of community that we all want. It's an important conversation. It's not always an easy one, but it's one that certainly I'm prepared to have with my constituents and with the whole province.
Why don't we open it up to the room? I'm sure some of the people in attendance may have some questions. Chef.
Morning, Premier. Nice to see you again. I see you at the SBOT as well, which was really great. Shafiq Jamal with the Fraser Valley Real Estate Board. You left us on a cliffhanger. Did the young lady and her boyfriend get together, and what happened?
I don't know. Yeah, no, she moved in with them and she rented the place. So,
joking aside, my question is about immigration. And what can we do as a province to continue to influence, steer in the direction of getting more skilled trades and skilled labor so that we can it can meet some of those needs that you were talking about building?
Yeah, thanks. So we have our provincial nominee program where we're able to make those adjustments, and we have around key areas of skilled trade recognition. But the biggest problem we've seen in the province is around recognizing the skills that people have when they move here. So they move here with a certain set of skills, and it could be around skilled trade, could be around a profession that they have, requirements for Canadian experience, requirements for multiple English tests, endless processes that cost tens of thousands of dollars with professional colleges to qualify to be able to do the work that you already know how to do because you did it somewhere else. This is really acute in medicine, but far from exclusive to medicine, where we need doctors and nurses and health science professionals. It is a whole array of professions, including my own profession of the practice of law, that has set up these incredibly challenging hurdles for people to get through. So we passed a set of laws that require just one English test, that restrict the ability to require Canadian experience. I mean, obviously you can require experience, but to require Canadian experience in order, it's a catch-22. People can't possibly meet that expectation. And for professional colleges to have a publicly available, understandable, and transparent process where people can have their credentials recognized so they can work here in British Columbia with the skills that they have instead of working as an Uber driver. is so important, and we've dedicated an MLA whose job it is to continue to work with the professional colleges, and the Ministry of Post-Secondary and Future Skills is implementing that legislation with professional colleges and with and in relation to skilled trades as well. So great question, and that's absolutely critical. Thanks very much. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you too.
Thanks for coming, Premier. It's great to hear from you at our session today. Is it okay if I have two questions? One's easy, one's not. Little.
Okay, I'll take the easy one.
The easy one's first. You know, there's a lot more to provincial policy that affects housing than just the housing ministry. So I wonder if you can update on us on some of the things that's coming out of things like Walrus or Energy Minds, and also finance or municipal affairs.
Okay, sure. So in terms of permitting, I addressed that briefly. I think our permitting times are down 30% for housing out of Walrus related to water is the main one where new housing is implicated. Ministry of Transportation has similar numbers. Anytime you're within a certain distance of a highway, Ministry of Transportation gets involved with their permitting process. And so we've been adding additional staff, but also in the short term and in the long term, streamlining the process. We have a single window if you're a housing builder where you can see the process of your permit through the system, where it's hung up, how long it's been there, what the average time is, and we're enhancing that so that we have transparency around our permitting process. Just one example. In forestry, we have a grant for a company called Massive Canada in Williams Lake. They're just about to close a sale on an old mill site to construct modular housing units for the province of BC using BC wood for deployment across the province, and standardizing those modular housing requirements, we think that we'll be able to bring down the time of construction and hopefully the cost of construction, as well as create jobs in the forestry sector. Just a couple examples. Mining is an interesting one. I can't think of what we're doing in mining that relates to housing, but I'm sure there's something. but I think it's a good one. Energy, though, we have a $36 billion capital plan with Hydro about upgrading the grid across the province to make sure we're able to provide electricity to all these new homes. And with all the electrical requirements that people have now, heat pumps, electric vehicles, and so on, to make sure that they're able to access cheap and clean hydro to power their lives, and that we're able to meet the demand, because that's a significant growth in demand in the province, too. So yeah, you helped me get there. Energy and mines.
Yeah, thanks. The other one you mentioned a little earlier about those tough discussions that you're having with mayors and council around the province. Now, you know, we've been going to things like the UBCM Housing Summit, and you know, we actually seen a lot of pushback from some mayors and some cities. You know, others are probably quite supportive. Are you concerned that there's going to be some sort of, you know, deliberate obstructionism from some of these municipalities for those specifically small-scale multi-unit housing and transit-oriented development, those sort of major rezoning pieces? And if so, what is your plan to deal with that?
Thanks. I don't know what the total number is. There's like maybe 200 municipalities in the province, something like that. And the opinions are as varied as you could possibly imagine. They're big and small. Some mayors are enthusiastic backers of this initiative. Other mayors are extremely apprehensive. And I do think there is the possibility that there might be some mayors out there that actively attempt to prevent this work from moving forward. But the reality is that we have structured the law so that that is not legally possible. If mayors and councils don't bring in their own regulations around this, and we think it better that they do that, they're able to respond to local concerns and ensure that it works for their community within the guidelines that we've set out. But if they don't do that, then the provincial rules apply. And if they refuse to issue permits, then someone could bring them to court, judicially review it, and the court will issue the permit. And I don't think mayors want to spend their time and energy on that, really. I don't think they do. Politically, it'll be a different story. I think there'll be mayors out there saying that's the worst thing that's ever happened. I think there are mayors out there that say this is long overdue. This is just part of the conversation we have with local governments on a whole array of different issues. From my perspective, for our government, we just have to send out the consistent message. This is what everybody's going to do. This is the direction we're going. Do your official community plan. Do that work with the community. Where do you want to put different things? Then bring your zoning into compliance with the official community plan, and have a set and established development cost charges so that everybody who wants to build knows where they can build it, what it's going to cost them to build it, based on a plan that's been set by the community, so that they don't have to, when they show up and want to build, enter into a multi-year negotiation about development cost charges, hope for a rezoning hearing, sit through multiple public hearings about each individual site. What a waste of time and energy. We are restructuring this. It's going to happen. We're not changing our minds, and we need your support on this. And here's some money to help you hire the planners to do the work. And here's some money, $1 billion, because we know you're growing really quickly, to build the infrastructure. It could be sports fields, it could be an arena, it could be whatever, that your community needs to respond to the growth that we're seeing. Local governments are key partners for us. It's not always easy, but we're setting a clear direction, expectation, and resources so that they're able to be successful.
I think when I look across the room with so many delegates here from our regional boards, I'm sure many of them would like a few minutes to take a photo with you today. So I thought maybe it would be a good idea to just end the session a little bit early to allow time for that, if you're amenable to that.
I'm in politics. I love that stuff.
It being an election year, I thought that would be jointly. But if there's one last question, go ahead.
Hi, Lisa McIntosh with the Greater Vancouver Realtors. We've changed our name. I just can't get it right. Sorry. And I asked a question to your housing minister, and I must say I wasn't 100% satisfied with the answer. So I'm going to ask you as well, and sorry to the delegates if we've heard this before, but it's about the short-term housing and what you call the Airbnb policy that's come in. And there's, and maybe when I asked, it was a bit too theoretical, so I'm going to give a very practical and real example. I have invested in real estate over the years, and I'm very proud to offer safe and well-maintained and renovated properties to people at really affordable prices. And part of what I offer is furnished rentals. And in the past, what I've been doing is it's 30 days plus. And there's so many people that are needing 30 days, 45, 60 days. They don't need a 90-day rental. And some of the examples in the last 6 months of who I've had, I have an immigrant family right now from Iran who needed 30 days to order in order to try to find housing. They couldn't find it, so they've ended up being there for 6 months now. I have a construction worker who's in for 40 days right now. I have traveling nurses back to back in properties. So these are very real needs of people by well within the municipal regulation of that 30 days. So by upping it to 90 days, that really cuts out housing for a lot of people. They don't want a hotel housing. They can't afford it, for one thing. And I'm just wondering your response of why 90 days, when I think in many municipalities the 30 days was working, and it being a loophole, I don't really accept that. So I just wonder if you can give comment on that, please.
Yeah, thanks. That's a good question. Anytime we implement a new policy, there are going to be edge cases where it's a question of, well, we'd love to address this particular issue, but we can't without affecting the integrity of the entire initiative. And or, this is a good point, by regulation, do we need to create some exemptions for certain categories? One that I can speak to directly is the issue of some strata hotels like Predator Ridge. Never intended to capture a place like Predator Ridge, where there's a hotel front desk, and by all appearances to anyone who stays there, they're staying in a hotel. It was not built as homes for people to live in. It was built as a hotel. And so as we work through the implementation of this legislation, we're going to find those unique scenarios that we need to accommodate and address through regulation. And maybe your situation is one of them. And I'll take it back with the housing minister, and we'll talk it through. The idea of 90 days was, in fact, to accommodate things like travel nurses and other short-term professional stays, but I understand your experience is that they stay for shorter periods of time, and that 30 days would be a better day. So I'm happy to take that back. That's one of the reasons why I'm here, is to hear suggestions about how we can make sure our policies work better. Thanks.
All right, well, why don't we end the session there? I will just end with a bit of a compliment. steered in your direction. You know, one of the things that I have long enjoyed about your political career and the various files that we've worked on together over the years, you know, you really get your hands dirty when it comes to the policy that you work with and are always quite knowledgeable about the files. And I know this is a real issue, housing affordability, and it's got to be a very exhausting job running this province. But thank you for your genuine approach and the hard work that you do on behalf of British Columbians.
Thanks, Trevor. Thanks, BCREA, for the opportunity. I appreciate it.